Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast. Hey, everyone. David Nagel, Successful Mind Podcast, and this is part two of Thomas Troward's Entering into the Spirit of It. So he starts off here by saying it sees itself, and he's referring to the originating spirit, as it were. He says it sees itself, as it were, reflected in various centers of life and energy, each with its appropriate form, but in the first instance of reflections can have no existence except within the originating mind. Now, it's interesting because when he's talking about the originating mind, if you were talking about the originating mind of the universe, whether you call that the universe itself or God or knowledge or whatever you want to call it, there's an intelligence there. And our brain has the ability to tap into that intelligence. Our brain is not the original originating mind, but it can originate from that mind. And it, because we have the power to choose, we also have the power to imagine. We can use the imaginative faculty, which is creative in nature. So it's also the ability to create. He says they have their first beginnings as mental images, so that in addition to the power of intelligence and selection, we must also realize that of imagination as belonging to the divine mind. And we must picture these powers as working from the initial motive of love and beauty, because that would add to life, not take away from life. And that's one of the interesting things about the universe. It's always moving toward more life. Even if you look at nature, so to speak, and you think about what does nature do to stay in balance with itself? It weeds out the weak, and it promotes the strength, the strong, the thing that is going to move on to create more life. But it does not completely remove everything from, like, if you take a weak plant and it dies, that turns into nutrition for the soil so something else can grow. If an animal is wounded or hurt or weak and it gets eaten by another animal, that nutrition from that animal is helping the stronger animal continue to move on with more life. And it's the same thing with all of life. It's consistently moving forward. He says, now this is the spirit that we need to enter into, and the method of doing so is a perfectly logical one. It's the same method by which all scientific advance is made. It consists in first observing how a certain law works under the conditions spontaneously provided by nature. Next, carefully considering what principle this spontaneous working indicates, and lastly, deducing from this how the same principle would act under specially selected conditions not spontaneously provided by nature. So one of the things that we have to think about there is one of those special conditions can be the way somebody thinks about something that's either true or not true. Because a person can come to a conclusion or a decision about something in their life that has no real basis in truth, even though it may be something that happened in their reality. Like when a person develops a phobia, they may have had something happen, but this special condition in their mind said that they need to be afraid of this. It happened again, and the fear kept growing until it became a phobia. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's true. The progress, so think about it the way that he's going to explain it here. The progress of shipbuilding affords a good example of what I mean. Formerly, wood was employed instead of iron, because wood floats in the water and iron sinks. Yet now, navies of all over the world are built of their boats are built of iron. Careful thought showed the law of flotation to be that anything could float which, bulk for bulk, is lighter than the mass of the liquid displaced by it. And so we now make iron float by the very same law by which it sinks, because by the introduction of the personal factor, we provided conditions which do not occur spontaneously, according to the esoteric maxim that nature unaided fails. Now, this is something that is extremely fascinating, because it's also how we began to uncover the laws of the universe and the laws of the mind and the laws of success. The ideas and the understandings around science and medicine, everything that we have become aware of as we progress as human beings. In a logical sense, we know that iron sinks in the water just like a rock sinks in the water. So it was a natural thing to build something out of wood. Also, it was probably something that we had the earlier ability to be able to do versus being able to shape iron. We were probably able to shape wood before we were able to shape iron. But we wouldn't think of making something out of something that actually sinks. But until we actually did start to think about it. So what I'm saying is that all of the things that we think about in life that hold us back, that are ideas that somebody else gave us, if you thought about them differently, could very much make a radical change in the way that you're actually living your life. And in a good way, I mean, in a very, very positive way. If we start to think from the natural law of abundance in the world versus lack, there would be so many different things that we could do and problems that we could currently solve in the world, because we're not coming from a place of that there's not enough. Okay, let me continue on here. So he says, now we want to apply the same process of the specializing a generic law to find the first of all the laws, that of the generic life-giving tendency of spirit itself. Without the element of the individual personality, the spirit can only work cosmically by generic law. But this law admits of far higher specialization, and the specialization can only be attained through the introduction of the personal factor. But to introduce this factor, the individual must be fully aware of the principle which underlies the spontaneous or cosmic action of the law. Where then will he find this principle of life? Certainly not by contemplating death. In order to get the principle to work the way that we require it to work, we must observe its action when it's working spontaneously in this particular direction. We must ask why it goes in the right direction as far as it does. And having learnt this, we then shall learn to be able to make it go further. The law of flotation was not discovered by contemplating the sinking of things, but by contemplating the floating of things which floated naturally, and then intelligently asking why they did. So let's say you want to be wealthy. You're not going to be wealthy by studying debt. You're not going to be wealthy by studying what you can't do. You're not going to be wealthy by believing that there's a totality of wrongness in risk-taking. It's by studying where you want to go, what it is that you want to do, what are the causes of wealth and riches in a person's life. It's always about looking at the direction of what you want to create. So it's like the old saying, don't play not to lose, play to win. when you play not to lose, you're holding very, very close to that to the center, and you're not moving out to the edge where that life has the ability to grow and to expand. Okay, the knowledge of a principle is to be gained by the study of its affirmative action. When we understand that we're in a position to correct the negative conditions which tend to prevent the action. Now, death is the absence of life, and disease is the absence of health. So, to enter into the spirit of life, we require to contemplate it, where it is to be found and where it is not. We are met with the old question, why seek ye the living among the dead? This is why we start our studies by considering the cosmic creation, for it is there that we find the spirit of life working through the untold ages, not merely as deathless energy, but with a perpetual advance into higher degrees of life. If we could only enter into the spirit as to make it personally in ourselves, with it evidently is in itself, the magnum opus would be accomplished. This means realizing our life as drawn direct from the originating spirit. And if we now understand that the thought or the imagination of the spirit is the great reality of being, and all the material facts are only correspondences, then it logically follows that what we have to do is to maintain our individual place in the thought of the parent mind. Meaning that this is what my mentor was trying to teach me, that if I put my faith in that spirit, I'm harmonizing with the original idea. One way that you could word this is that you could say, I want to know the truth in everything. Now it's interesting when you say that, because there are what we call different truths that aren't necessarily the truth, but it could be one person's truth based on the reality of the experience that they have in their life. What they're not aware of is that there is a higher truth that governs over everything that would allow them to experience something completely different. I know that's a bit of a mouthful, but you have to really, this is one of those things that you really have to sit and think about, because you take a person maybe that went through the depression, and their truth is that they need to they really need to save. They need to save every resource they have, because work is very scarce. Food, there's not an abundance of food. There's all kinds of problems that are going on that are basically life-threatening at that time that people were going through the depression. So that was the truth that they were living by. Even though the truth of abundance is over or more true than the truth of the reality that they were experiencing, if they were not aware of the idea of abundance, then they have a bigger problem. But what could have been changed if they had that awareness? Now, here's the thing. There are people that lived during that time that had that awareness that did not have those experiences. They did not have negative experiences because of the economic condition of the United States at that time. They actually did very, very well. They had a much different mindset. Here's where somebody would put something in that would be a different truth that's actually not really true, but it's the only way that they can associate it in their thinking. They could look at those individuals and say, well, they're lucky. Or they could look at them and say, well, they were rich, they had more money, so they were able to weather the storm. Now, some of those things may be true. Maybe the person did have more money and they were able to weather the storm more. But there were people that actually did very well, and the reason that they did well was because they were not thinking about lack and what they don't have and what they can't do. But if a person is raised in that mindset, they're not putting themselves into the parent mind, so to speak. So we could say that's the God mind, the spirit mind. the universal mind, universal truth. They're not aligning themselves with that thought. Another saying from Scripture, and I'm probably not quoting this 100% accurately, but it's basically, with God, I can do all things, right? Or with, when God is for us, who could be against us, type thing. Basically, what this means is that when I hold a higher truth of an outcome for myself, then that can be the reality that I can step into. And I don't have to obey the limited rules or the limited thoughts that are being spread around by people that have a very different experience of life, but that experience is based in fear and based in survival. It's not actually based in something that is expansive in their life. And then you have people that have been hurt, and they're vindictive, and they hate, and they're angry, and they're sick, and it's very difficult for them to experience the love of that parent mind to bring it into their life in the lives of other individuals. So what I'm saying is that, yeah, we have this so-called truth that people live by because that's the experience and the reality that they have been raised in and how they've experienced the world. But there's a higher truth that they can tap into that would totally change all of that if they understood it. And that's what we're doing. We're attempting to understand here what this actually is. He says, we have seen the action of the originating mind. The originating mind must be generic. That is, according to the types which include multitudes of individuals. This type of reflection of the creative mind at the level of that particular genius and at the human level is man, not associated with particular circumstances, but as existing in the absolute ideal. So you have, like, you have man created in the image of, but man also has choice. So now man goes out and they create their own image of the world, but it's based on a lack of understanding. It's not based in truth. So that's where all the problems come from. Man has stepped away from the originating mind, the originating idea, the originating spirit. They're not entering into the spirit of things that are good. They're entering into the spirit of things that are not good. And then they become that which they don't want to experience. But that stays their reality. He says, in proportion, then as we learn to disassociate our conception of ourselves from the particular circumstance and to rest upon the absolute nature as reflections of the divine ideal, we in turn reflect back into the divine imagination its original conception of itself as expressed by generic or typical man. And so by the natural law of cause and effect, the individual who realizes this mental attitude enters permanently into the spirit of life and becomes the perennial fountain of life springing up spontaneously within him. Now, it's interesting that he uses the word permanently. And I'm going to tell you why I think he uses the word. I'm really big, when I study things, I'm breaking things down sentence by sentence and very often asking myself the question, why is the author using a specific word? So, like, in what I'm reading, the one thing that really stands out is that he's using this word permanently. Like, you step into this, the spirit of this, you enter into it permanently. And I was thinking, why would he use that word? And here's the reason why. Because once you become aware of something, you cannot become unaware of it again. It's just like when I teach people how to become wealthy, how to actually bring money into their life. Once you become aware of how easy that actually is, you don't become unaware of it again. You lived in a state of ignorance or a state of somebody else's truth around what it's like to make a lot of money. But when you actually learn and become aware that it's easy to do, and it's easy to do on a large scale, you don't go back into that ignorance again. And what Troward is indicating here is that as we step into the spirit of something and we see what we actually have the ability to have control over or the ability to create in our life and our life itself, we don't go back into that ignorance again. It's permanent because it's awareness. I remember a long time ago I learned that really the only thing we ever really do in our life, if we're conscious, is become more and more aware of our power with our Creator, our oneness with that Creator, as a creation to keep creating. And it begins, the more we do that, the more ignorance that we shed off of ourselves, of our thinking, and the more we step into that awareness. That's why he's using the word permanent here, because it doesn't go away, which is a magnificent thing, because it's not something that you can ever lose. Once you become aware of that, and once your life begins to change, it doesn't go back. It doesn't go back, all right? So let me just finish this up here. He then finds himself to be, as the Bible says, the image and likeness of God. He has reached a level at which he affords a new starting point for the creative process and the spirit, finding a personal center in him. And it begins to work de novo. Having thus solved the great problem of how to enable the universe to act directly upon the plane in particular. It is in this sense, as affording the requisite center for a new departure of the creative spirit, that man is said to be a microcosm or universe in miniature. And this is also what is meant by the esoteric doctrine of the octave, of which I may be able to speak more fully on another occasion. If the principles here stated are carefully considered, they will be found to throw light on much that would otherwise be obscure, and they would also afford the key to other succeeding teachings beyond this. So the freedom, this is why I say you need to take these two and study them. Really make it part of your study if you're really interested in this. And of course, if you want to get a copy of this, you could get the book, The Dory Lectures on Mental Science by Thomas Troward, and in the this lecture is actually in that book. So, and you can get that on Amazon or something. But the thing about this that is just so damn fascinating is that the only way that you can experience this and become aware of it, like I said in the beginning, is to actually step in and do it. You have to step in and trust spirit. And that means that, so let me explain what I mean by trusting spirit. Most of the things that people won't do are because they're afraid of some kind of consequence, or that there won't be enough resource to be able to move through some situation in their life. I see people stay in jobs that they absolutely hate instead of switching and going to another job or going to school to get more educated or starting their own business because they have this job, they've been there for a long time, they've got seniority or tenure, they've got life or they got health insurance, they're working toward some kind of compensation for their retirement, but they're miserable. They're just absolutely miserable, and they're thinking about what they don't want if they were to quit. And truth is they would love to quit and go do something different with their life, but they won't do it. They don't trust that there is this spirit that will meet them at that junction of the decision. And here's the other thing about it. The thing that comes first with this, this comes first with everything, by the way, when you're following spirit in your life. Nothing shows up until you make the decision. There's an opportunity around you right now that will allow you to move forward, whether you see it or not. We talked about that in the law of polarity. There's always an opportunity. If you make the decision to step into it, then more doors open, right? So that spirit, that original mind, it meets you with the opportunity. It meets you with the intelligence. It meets you with the answers. It meets you with the resources. As long as you don't say no and you keep saying yes as stepping into it, you can enter into the spirit of anything, which you can then become successful. Because there is no failure when you enter into the correct spirit of something. That's one of those higher truths, right? There's no failure there. It is only more progression and more success. I thoroughly hope you enjoyed this. If you have any questions on it, feel free to email us at tsm@davidnagel.com. We'll be happy to answer it. And if you want to hear, if you'd like to hear me teach more things from Troward or other authors, let me know and I'd be happy to do it. Take care, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.